What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times. But this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Just some housekeeping before we get started. It is a guest episode, so we do have a guest in studio today. This month, we are continuing with our book club. We're reading Winning by Tim Grover. Getting started with it, really enjoying it so far. Kind of goes into, you know, he was Kobe and Michael Jordan and Dwayne Wade. He was their coach. It's been really, really good so far. So read it along with us. And at the end of the month, we'll do a podcast recapping the book and, tell you what we thought, you know, some of our takeaways and, follow along. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum with caffeine, L-theanine, vitamins B12 and B6. Helps keep you focused. I like to chew it when I work out, while I'm driving around showing houses. Sometimes when I'm drilling jiu-jitsu, I like to chew it. It's great. I consume it all the time. I generally like the product. So, you know, get some NeuroGum, try it out. If you ever see me, I've always got pack on me. Ask me for a piece. And
shout out to our people over at Fit Flavors. Now until the end of this month, we have promo code podcast50 gets you 50% off a gift card online. So like I went on, bought $1,000 gift card for $500, which is great. Still have a ton of money left. I love it. I eat there on a daily basis. Hell, I just crushed one right before we started recording. It's great for tracking macros, making sure you're hitting all your numbers and targets. And I mean, it's one of the big reasons why I've been able to lose about 15 pounds since beginning of the year, since we started all the nutrition stuff. So,
all right. And now to introduce our guest today. He's a good friend of mine. He is a first degree jiu-jitsu black belt under Kyle Watson, the host of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show, the diabolical leader of the Head Nod Squad, the great and powerful Josh McKinney.
Ooh, good intro right
Thank
there.
You. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that Thanks might be my new here. Podcast intro. Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
That'd be great. I love it. Well, Josh, I guess let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, man, for those of you guys out there that don't know Josh.
I feel like you said pretty much all the cool stuff. I have a podcast. I have a black belt. I run two jiu-jitsu schools. I'm a jiu-jitsu coach. And that is most of my business. That's what I spend most of my time outside of family doing is running my podcast, coaching. And I still do, even though I'm getting a little older. I mean, I'm not as old as you, but even though I'm getting a little
2 years older than you,
getting a little older, I still compete in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Well, you're born in Granite City? You've lived out there your whole life?
I lived in Madison most of my life, and so that's pretty much Granite City. It's just worse. And so eventually, you know, we got called up to the bigs when I was like 19 and we moved to Granite City.
Called up to the bigs.
Uh-huh. You know, we moved to the place everyone's trying to get to.
Yeah.
And from there, yeah, I've been in Granite City, Pontoon Beach area since. It's where my gym my main school is Head Nod HQ.
So when you, I know that there's two. I didn't know you coached at both of them, or do you?
I own both of them.
Okay.
I teach in Jerseyville generally like once a month.
Okay.
Logan Wayne is the head coach in Jerseyville. Have you ever met Logan?
I don't think so.
So he's one of my black belts. He's been with me. I mean, he was under Kyle before, but he's been with me since I opened 9 years ago, and then I want to say it was 4 years ago that we opened Jerseyville.
Okay. And this is a question I've always wanted to ask you. Where did the name Head Nod come from?
So, you know Adam Marburger?
Yeah.
So Adam and I, in maybe 2013, 14, 15, sometime in that era, we were competing a lot in jiu-jitsu. And we were just doing as many IBJJF tournaments and traveling for them. It was just kind of this fun thing we were getting to do. And one day, he and I were at a tournament, and we were Snapchatting each other, and we kept Snapchatting each other this, like, head nod, like, hey, what's up? And we just kept saying what's up, and then as it progressed, it turned into, like oh, I'm going to get a group of people to do this with me, and we're all going to be head nodding for the Snapchat. And then it became this funny thing that we were doing where we were posting them on Facebook, but I remember I was walking, like, the Hollywood stars one time, and I did a head nod with Iron Man, you know? And so I was like, hey, just do what I do. And he's like, okay. And I gave it the head nod and he gave it the head nod. And it was just this fun thing that we did. And one of Kyle's black belts, Matt Engelbart, one day said, you guys should call yourself the Head Nod Squad. And we were like, that's funny. We should do that. And then eventually that ended up becoming, because it was with Adam, that ended up becoming a business. And we were running a t-shirt company for, and I say a t-shirt company, it was all kinds of apparel, but it was mainly t-shirt. And we ran it for like 2 years and it did well, but it was just like the amount of effort that you have to put in to get something out of a jiu-jitsu apparel company is excessive.
For sure.
And but in that time was when I opened my first jiu-jitsu school. And we went like the first 3 or 4 months without having a name, because that's just...
Well, it was like the garage or something, right?
So originally we were all training in a garage before that. And so when I opened a real school, we had rented what used to be an apartment. And I think in total it was 1,500 square feet. Half of it was my dad's weightlifting facility and the other half was the jiu-jitsu school. And so it was really just a part of my dad's weightlifting facility, really. You know, we had a back room to it.
Just with mats in it.
Mm-hmm. And so it was just pretty unofficial, but we were running classes and it just didn't have a name. And it was just like, yeah, Josh and Steve's gym. Okay. And one day, one of the, a guy, he runs Ep Legends in Effingham. His name's Chad Hawkins. He said, he's like, hey, what's the, I'm trying to tag your gym on Facebook. What's its name? And I go, dude, I don't have a name. And he was sponsored by Head Nod at that time. And he goes, you should call it Head Nod HQ. And I go, okay, that's a good idea. And so,
stuck.
Yeah. So all those names, it's just a really long way of saying I stole it. You know, it was somebody else's idea and I've just ran with it ever since.
Well, it's yours now.
Well, yeah. But I mean, like, think about it though. Like, you see a guy on the street or someone that you recognize, you give him the head nod. Like, that's a sign of respect. Like, yeah,
it is,
you know, up, you can head nod down, head nod up, mm-hmm. whatever, yeah. you know, like.
Head nod down's a little more serious. You know what I mean? Like, head nod down, like, I don't know this guy. I'm not willing to show him my neck.
Right.
You
know? Exactly.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I just, there are a lot of types of head nod. If you go strong eyebrow and hit your head nod, like,
yeah,
so, oof, are we fighting? You know? And so, you know, there's a lot of range to it.
Yeah.
We don't do the head nod thing anymore for our gym. You know, that's not really part of the brand anymore.
Yeah.
It's just the name of the gym.
Yeah. I've always wondered. Cause I mean, I joined Kyle's 4 years ago, I guess. Cause I was training elsewhere before. And then, you know, I never knew. So I was just, I've always wondered where did the head nod thing come from? I was like, are they really into like head banging music or, you know, I never knew what it was.
When you sent me over the thing last night and I was reading through it and it said Head Nod Squad. And I was like, I wonder if they've got like a secret head nod for their people at their gym.
Yeah.
If we do, I couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, if we do, it would have to say, if there was a hidden head nod that, you know, whatever got you into the secret room of training or whatever, I can't speak about that.
First rule head nod squad.
Yeah. you don't talk about head nod squad. So, when did you get into jiu-jitsu? Let's hear that. Cause I know you started training real young.
I started when I was 14. I tried a couple different sports because my mom made me. I was just not a very active kid and I was overweight. And so she made me try tennis, made me try basketball, made me try all kinds of different random things. And they never stuck. And so she's like, man, you guys have always been into martial arts. You're going to take karate or taekwondo or something like that. And I had been into like the UFC. And so I knew I didn't want to take karate. Like at that time,
yeah, we knew that karate's bullshit.
Yeah, nobody's coming out and doing any karate. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. And it just so happened, like during this couple week argument, somebody tells my mom, hey, did you hear that there is a new MMA school opening up in Granite City? It's literally 6 minutes from my house. And like, no, what is it? And so it was Matt Hughes's gym. Mm-hmm. At the time, Matt Hughes, like UFC champion,
yeah, champ.
As this was opening. And so I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And I still wasn't gung-ho about it.
You're 14?
Yeah, okay. At 14, I just didn't want to do anything. And so...
It's hard.
Yeah, and it's just like, I just wanted to be home and watch pro wrestling. You know, I didn't want to fight,
you
know?
Work out and get sweaty.
Exactly. There was just no... I had plans. And so I go on a Tuesday night because there's no Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown. And I'm sure that I'm not going to do it. I'm sure that, like, okay, I'll do this once a week. My mom will be happy. This was just something I have to
get
do.
Her
like,
off my back. Yeah.
Like all the other things that we've always done, I'll do this for 3 months, 6 months, and then I'll be done with it. And we'll be back to just not doing anything. And I did the first class. First class was with Kyle. And
he was the coach.
He was the coach. And I mean, there were at 14, I was not only overweight, but I was short. I was small for my age. And there were, I think the closest guy to my age was like 25. And so, and it wasn't a big, you know, there were six people, eight people. And, you know, we asked, cause the general manager goes, oh, you'll ask the coach if he can even train, you know, if he's not too small. And so Kyle, I just remember him looking me up and down and he goes, we'll try it, you know, and we'll just see. And I'm like, okay. And so he showed me triangle to armbar to omoplata. And I loved doing it. We got to roll live. I rolled with a old fat guy that was also really short. And I just beat the brakes off that. Oh. And then from there on, I don't think I won a round for like the next 6 months. But that old fat guy who was battling heart issues,
yeah,
he didn't stand,
he didn't stand a chance.
I don't think I submitted him as much as he just gassed. But regardless,
fatigue,
you know,
makes cowards of us all.
Exactly. Exactly. I drug him into the deep water. Something about being a shark. I don't know. I was very new.
That day a killer was born.
Yeah, exactly. And and so. But from there, I remember coming off the mat and I told my dad, because my dad came with me and watched the whole thing. And my dad probably would have even jumped into that first class. He had trained a little jujitsu before, but he had a hernia at the time. And I like come off the mat. I go, Dad, I want to do this every day for the rest of my life. And he goes, me too.
Sick.
And we have.
Yeah.
You know, and so in the last 16 years, like we both have gotten our black belts. Travel and teach, travel and learn from super high level coaches, and just get to travel and or not even travel, just be in Granite City and just enjoy jujitsu still to this day. And dude, so
it's so cool that you and your dad, like, that's just something you guys do together.
That's
like,
awesome.
That's something I was thinking about, because I mean, we talk about, you know, fatherhood and stuff on this show, and I mean, that's just such a cool father son thing to do. I mean, that's something that, you know, most guys don't get to do with their dad and beat him up, you know,
right.
Like, or, you know, have your dad beat you up and like all these, like, and actually, you know, choke your dad out. You know, it's not something that happens often.
As a father, that's a scary thought.
Yeah. You know?
But it's not only that, like, how many fathers get to, with their 14-year-old to 18-year-old son, drive in the car with them 10 minutes there and back, right, every single day, and have a real conversation that isn't forced and is totally genuine. And really, you get to speak into your kid's life in a way that most dads don't get to do.
Oh, right? 100%, dude.
And so to me, it's just like when I think back to just, you know, when people are like, oh, where did this habit come from? Oh, probably my dad.
Yeah, dude. And it's something I was thinking about, you know, some of those post, you know, training, you know, like just sitting around on the mat when you're all fucking tired and we're all sitting around just talking, like those are some of the like best conversations I've ever, you know, I've had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just to have like my dad be a part of that would be so cool.
Well, and like for me, it was early on, it was me watching my dad have those conversations. Mm-hmm. I was still so young in that group that it was like, I had no idea how to be a man.
Sure.
You know, I had no idea what was really important, you know, from then on. And I got to see all these guys that were like 10 years ahead of me in life. And a lot of them were telling me the mistakes that they had made in between and like, oh, yeah, don't go to college, Josh.
Yeah.
And that was one of the big things that all those guys told me is like, you know, you want to do jiu-jitsu. You are sure of it. You know, you're here every single day. You've been committed for 4 years. I have $80,000 in student loans and I'm a blackjack dealer. You know, it doesn't make sense. Don't go if you're not going to go for something that you need to go for.
Sure.
Right.
Like doctor, and lawyer, something like that.
Yeah. And that was always that advice. And that's just like one of the millions of pieces of advice that I got from guys. It's not even like guys that were super smart. It was just guys that were wiser because they had experienced all that stuff.
Right. Because when we're younger, you know, we just spend all the time we spend or with people our own age, and, you know, having that, you know, I never had that.
The life experiences you got from that at a young age is leaps and bounds ahead of anybody else at your age.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on top of that, like, your dad was pretty much fresh to the gills starting right when you were too, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, so he had trained for probably a year before me. And so he stayed 6 months to a year ahead of me promotion wise. Mm-hmm. But it really was, I mean, we were still so beginning together.
Talking about those conversations, it's like you have to be so humble to be that way in front of your kid. Mm-hmm. And for you guys to get better at that together, I mean, just the kind of bond that I wish I could have had with my parents. My hat's off to you. That's such a cool account right there.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, for me, there's so many little things that I just remember of, like, you know, there were guys in the gym that neither of us could beat. Mm-hmm. And we were always pretty good. I mean, after a year or two, you know, not many people have a year or two of jiu-jitsu under their belt.
Oh, yeah.
So always did pretty good in the gym. But there would be certain guys that we just, neither of us could hang with, and getting to see how my dad handled that. And it wasn't like, hey, I'm 50 and that's why I can't beat this 25-year-old who's trained jiu-jitsu longer than me.
Right.
It was like, hey, maybe we're going to get some private lessons with Kyle. And mm-hmm. so we can figure this out. And it was a different mentality that I think a lot of people learn through osmosis from their parents. And it was just like, nah, I'm 50, but I know I can learn a lot more and I know I can still get better at this. And it just taught me so much getting to see that and experience that.
Dude, so cool, man.
That's what I'm excited about, because I'm getting ready.
Yeah, he's about to strap the white belt on.
Oh, right.
Yeah, starting, probably going to come in next week.
Right, starting Watson's.
Battling a little bit of a sickness last week into this week. I'm finally getting over it, so I feel like I have the energy to go through and get that. But like, I've got a 4 and 5 year old, so I want to get them involved mm-hmm. and get them into it. And it's like, I want to have that relationship that you had with your dad with my kids. And now, like, I mean, I'll have that with them with baseball. They start baseball this summer, and I mean, I don't know how much you know about me. I played professionally for up until I was 27 years old when I retired. And so I get to have that bond with them on the baseball field. But obviously, like, I'm leaps and bounds ahead of them. And it's more of like a coaching aspect on that end, where, I mean, it'll be fun to experience it through their eyes again at such a young age. But I want to be able to do something new that I don't know shit about, that they don't obviously know anything about, and be able to learn with them and grow with them throughout the whole thing. So,
okay. So let me ask you something.
Obviously they're 4 and 5. I'm not ready to get them into it just yet, but.
So I am, for context, I am a brand new dad. I have a 6-month-old, and when you were talking about that, it just kind of brought this thought there, this question a lot of people ask me, and it's like, well, what if Matthew doesn't like jiu-jitsu, right? And they ask me that. And so I have an answer to that, but I was just curious. To you, played professionally.
Yep.
Obviously, to get there, you're dedicated to the game. You love the game.
Right.
What if they hate baseball?
That's fine. I could care less. I just want to give them every opportunity. Like, that's the thing. So, like, I asked them, and they want, like, I'm like, boys, what sports do you want to play? I want you guys to play as many in all sports as you possibly can. I feel like that's what I did. I mean, I grew up playing as many possible sports as I could. And then as I got older, I started filtering sports away and focused. Like, by the time I got to high school, I was playing hockey, football, baseball. And then halfway through, or at the beginning of my sophomore year of high school, I ditched football, stuck to hockey, baseball. Then I realized, like, hey, I've got a future in baseball, not so much in hockey. And I was getting hurt a lot playing hockey. So I'm like, after my junior year, I filtered out hockey. And then my senior year was when I solely focused on baseball. And like, that's the thing, is like, everybody that I played with in college and pro ball were multiple sport athletes. So heck, I'd say probably 50% of the guys that I played pro ball with had scholarships in other sports than baseball. Like, that's how, that's what kind of pisses me off is about now, is everybody's pushing these kids to focus on one sport early. And I think that's the dumbest fucking thing ever. Now, going back to your question, if my kids came up and said they want to dance, you better fucking believe I'm getting them in dance lessons. Like, that's the thing, is like, I'll ask them, and I ask them what their interests are. And so, for example, my two kids are polar opposites. Connor, my oldest one, he loves baseball. And he's like, that's the thing, is like, I don't have any baseball stuff around my house. Like, you guys have been in my house. I don't have any baseball stuff up. And he just happened to stumble across baseball on YouTube one day and was like, Dad, this is the coolest sport ever. I want to play the sport. And this was when he was like 3 years old. And he started, he picked up the ball and started throwing at three. And he's very advanced for his age. Now, Oliver, on the other hand, he's my rough and tumble. He wants to fight and hit people and all that stuff. So it's like, I asked him, I'm like, buddy, do you want to play baseball? He goes, no, not really. I was like, well, can you try it for a summer? And then if you don't like it, then you don't have to play. He goes, okay, that's fine. So there's so many life lessons in baseball. And that's the one of the biggest reasons why I want them to get into it. But I'm not going to force it. If they get, after we play T-ball and they're like, ah, fuck baseball. I'm like, cool, we'll never play that again. What's the next sport you want to try? They're half Bosnian, so they want to get into soccer. So that's another thing. You know, so that's part of it. But, you know, they've already played soccer. They both love soccer. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to let them try whatever they want to try. But I know that Ollie's excited about getting in and wrestling, and because he's already trying to wrestle and fight. So I'm like, this is going to be perfect for him.
I'm in there.
So what about you? What is your answer to that when people ask?
I totally agree. I think I don't know a whole lot about parenting, but I've just seen a lot of jiu-jitsu dads that are not very good dads. Yeah. And usually it's how they treat their kids when they lose and how they the pressure that they put on their kids, right? And never have I seen a guy that was really good at jiu-jitsu do that. It's only ever dads that don't know how to do jiu-jitsu.
Right, which is crazy because everything I've heard these guys talk about is you spend the first so many years of jiu-jitsu getting your fucking ass kicked and never winning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I feel like if you're wanting to get better at jiu-jitsu, you're wanting to fight people that are better than you, so you're constantly going to be losing to learn new things. So, like, it makes sense why you're saying the people that are really good at jiu-jitsu aren't like that, because they understand, like, hey, we've been getting our asses kicked for years, and that's why we've gotten to this place.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are just average, that's why they're average. So, no, it makes complete sense.
And so you do see so many dads that put this pressure on their kid, mm-hmm. You know,
like,
and
this is what I do, so you got to do it too.
And it's not even that. It's just this, like, whatever you do, you better win and be the best at, because I have nothing going on in my life. Mm. And so what else am I going to post
projection
on Facebook?
Yeah. You know? Well, so here's the thing that my parents did that were great. So my parents didn't know jack shit about baseball. My dad didn't play growing up. My dad was a football, soccer, hockey guy. And those were sports that he kind of pushed me into. Now, granted, I love playing hockey. I still play hockey. Hockey was hands down my favorite sport to play. It was just a brutal sport on my body. 6 concussions, separated shoulder, broken ankle, like all sorts of shit that, hey, those are important aspects of my body that I need for baseball that I don't want to fucking hurt. And so, but for baseball, they got me in with the best coaches, and they trusted them, and they just stepped back. Now, my mom was real rah-rah, typical mom, but my dad, he would, like, I remember I hit my dad would go sit behind the fence and read a book, and he hated baseball. He's like, this is the most boring sport in the world. And so he would go sit behind the fence and he'd read a book, and I remember one time he would, like, pass out halfway through the game because it was so boring. Well, he passed out and he had a book, like, laying on his chest, and I smoked the book with a home run. Like, smack dab in the chest.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. And so that was one of the cool stories, because I popped up, woke up, and he was, like, looking around, and he see me running. Like, yo, yeah. I'm like, you asshole, you were fucking asleep.
That's awesome.
But, like, that's the thing. There was no pressure. Like, there was no pressure for me to exceed at baseball. And that was the thing, is, like, my pitching coach, who's, like, my older brother, he was my coach until I retired. And he was the one who was like, no, Pat has a future in this. And my parents were like, fuck you. You're just trying to make more money for us paying for more lessons.
Mm.
And he goes, no, fuck that. If that's how you feel, then I'll, like, you don't have to pay for lessons. I just think Pat's that good and he has the opportunity to do it. And so that was the greatest thing. Like, I told my parents my goals and what I wanted from baseball. And the only thing they would do is just, if I was getting lazy or anything like that, they'd be like, hey, you mentioned your goal was to do this. Do you still want it? That was all they would do. And then they left it to me to answer the question, like, well, yeah, I still want it. Well, fuck, I'm being lazy. I need to get off my ass. Or if that point I said no, well, then there you go. I had my answer. My heart wasn't in anymore. And that was the greatest thing that they could have ever done. And that's what I'm going to, the approach I want to take with my kids. So,
yeah, I mean, I heard a line once where someone's, or I think it was on a podcast or something recently, but, you know, they said you can never make your kids love something, but you can make them hate something.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, if you shove it down their throat, they're going to fucking hate it. They got to mm-hmm. love it too. So, you know, I just want to just set the example for my kids that, you know, hey, man, this is what I do. I enjoy it. I do it, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. This is what I do. And I mean, I'm hoping I can keep up that schedule when the new baby comes here, because we're about 4 weeks away. 4 weeks from tomorrow, we get the scheduled C-section. So,
all right.
Yeah, baby number two.
All right.
So, how you feeling?
I'm ready, man. Yeah. I just want to know, because we don't know if it's a boy or girl yet. We're doing the surprise. So
do you have a boy name and a girl name, or is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's, I'm sworn to secrecy, though.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
You want to ask?
Yeah. So I, we're really excited. I just want to know. I really want to know if it's a boy or girl really bad, you know, but yeah, pumped.
Are you leaning either way?
I think it's a girl.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's just cause that's kind of what I want. You know?
Okay.
I don't know. Just cause we have a boy. So I was like, I want a girl now too.
All right.
So yeah.
Two boys are a lot of fun.
Well, that's true. I mean, I'm not going to be mad if it's a boy.
Right. Two, I'll tell you.
Take it back.
Two boys. I mean, especially within how close they are in age. I mean, yeah, like I said,
a year apart.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's funny because like I taught them, I'm like, they would fight each other early on. So like I bought them boxing gloves and I told them, I go, listen, if you guys are going to fight each other, we're not bare knuckle fighting and punching each other that way. Put the boxing gloves, strap them up. Here are the rules. No punching above the shoulders, no punching below the waist. If someone does, the other person gets to hit that person in the same spot. And we've had zero issues.
I love it.
It's awesome.
Instant karma.
Oh yeah. They put it on and they duke it out whenever they have an issue with each other. Problem solved. Move on. They go back.
That's superior parenting.
What?
That's superior parenting.
Yeah. Yes. Fucking let it go.
This is why I wish I had like siblings growing up, because I never had that opportunity to beat the shit out of someone and, you know, be okay with it later on.
Well, that's the thing is I had my younger brother, but he was so much smaller than I was that I was taught from a young age that you're going to seriously hurt him if you fight with him. So I was always like, so I just avoided him.
Nobody taught my brother that.
Yeah, no.
My brother was 6.5 years older than me, and nobody said, hey, you're 6.5 years older than him. You shouldn't roundhouse kick him full force with your taekwondo skills that you have.
Oh.
And so, yeah, we just fought all the time too, but it was for sport, I think. I think we were both always cool with it. Like, what else are we going to do?
Well, you can kick his ass now, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah, fuck your taekwondo.
Yeah. Give me that leg.
That kid can't do shit with your back against the ground.
Yeah. Well, Josh, you did it, man. You made jujitsu a job. I got a lot of buddies out there that, you know, wish that they were, you know, doing jujitsu as a job. Have you ever thought what you'd be doing if you weren't?
I've tried to answer that. And at this point, I've done jujitsu longer than I was alive not doing jujitsu. And so it's affected my life so differently. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like, I couldn't even tell you. You know, my dad's had a personal training business. I'm sure we were trying entrepreneurial stuff right when we were starting jiu-jitsu. And so I'm sure it would have been something entrepreneurial, probably a better vehicle than jiu-jitsu. But I just don't know if it would be a more fun vehicle, you know? Dude,
that's the most fun vehicle.
Mm-hmm. And it's that, like, getting to that to be my day-to-day grind is not a huge grind. And so, for me, that's, you know, something I'm so thankful that I'm here, but I just couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I'm just curious.
Where else I would be or who else I would be if it wasn't for jiu-jitsu.
Oh, yeah. It's
not for our listeners, because I don't think people realize the dedication that it takes to get to where you're at as a black belt in jiu-jitsu. You started at 14. You trained every day. How long did it take you to become a black belt?
I didn't get my black belt until I was 25, and so 11 years.
11 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Isn't 10 the average?
Usually, yeah,
if you train three times a week.
10 to 12 is what I see a lot. When you are an adult competitor, it tends to be longer, and it's just because that level is so high.
Sure.
So like a black belt adult competitor is going to be it's almost uncomparable to like what you would call an average black belt.
Sure.
It just wouldn't even seem like they were doing the same thing. And so you will tend, when you're younger, you'll tend to be a little slower on your progress with that. Yep. And so for me, it was 11. I think, how long have you trained under Kyle?
I've been under Kyle for 4 years, I started training under him in 2020. I trained under Ezra before that.
Okay. So 2020. So for
you, trained in 2018.
So generally, that would mean you would have like 2 belt promotions since then would be the normal.
Which I have.
With Kyle, you might have gotten a stripe and that's it, you know, right? Like so that's just like Kyle always took it slow for me on like purple belt and brown belt, especially because there were certain things that he, I mean, it wasn't that long before he was a purple belt when I started training under him. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't that long before that he was in those divisions and he was like, man, there's still things you need to learn about. You need to learn here than you trying to learn at black belt at, you know, 21, you know? Sure. And so I think skill wise, I was probably pretty close to black belt for a long time. But I think it was just more of that level of competition.
What do you think the hardest part of the journey was? Because obviously, you know, it's not over at black belt. You're going to keep doing it. But I think the most common thing, and I'm the resident white belt in the room already. So for me, you know, looking at so many people who are above me, it's like you're going to reach different points where you probably struggle more or like you're really into it, but you feel like you're hitting a wall. And I've heard most times it's people going from like blue to purple. Would you co-sign that or do you have a different account?
Man, it's different for everybody. And this is, you know, generic to say, but it's because everybody's journey is just unique, right?
Sure.
Because for me, I didn't really hit any trials in my jiu-jitsu until like mid purple belt. Even when I got my purple belt, I was like exceptionally good at purple belt because I was 18 and I trained jiu-jitsu every day.
Sure.
When I started to struggle was just, it was like an outside life thing where I had to start working more from, you know, being in high school. And so just trying to do that and that extra, I was a personal trainer and I was building my own business as a personal trainer. And the effort that it took to do that on top of, you know, a lot of times I was training twice a day when I was 18 because physically I could do that. Mm-hmm. And then time wise, I could do that also.
Yeah.
And it's just so hard to beat an 18-year-old kid that trains 14 times a week when you train 4 times a week, you know? And so I really did well early on. And then right at like 19, when I just really started to get busier with my business, I stopped being able to dedicate as much time to competition and to training. And I was still training a lot, but it just wasn't a lot for the division that I was in. Mm-hmm. And it was really discouraging because it's not like, I wasn't losing in the gym really much at that time either. But like going into competition, fighting the best purple belts mm-hmm. in the world, I was losing. And it was really frustrating because I was like, I don't know how to bridge that gap. And so that was really the only point that I even kind of even thought about quitting jiu-jitsu. But again, it was just so late for me because I just didn't really have any other trials other than, well, I'm getting submitted, but like, who cares? What
still
else am I
going
to be doing? Yeah, I'm having a blast. You know, I went from having zero friends to having like 30, 25-year-old friends. And, yeah. You know, anybody at my school, I'm like, dude, all my friends are so much cooler than you guys. Right. You know, like my friends drink beer and they buy it with their real ID.
With their real
you
ID.
Know? Yeah, I'm not even worried about it, bro.
Yeah, I don't need a fake ID. I got fucking That's Joe great. The plumber over here that will go get it for me.
You'll choke all your friends' dads out.
Exactly. But yeah, so I would just say it's different for everybody. But I would say that everybody is going to have parts of their jiu-jitsu. Some people, it's more than one.
Yeah.
But parts of their jiu-jitsu where it's logical to quit jiu-jitsu. Sure. It's not logical to keep training jiu-jitsu when your body is beat up from it, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know. You still do it, though.
Or just addicted.
Yeah, the weirdos do it. And so, you know, I would say that most of the time, it's easy to just be like, yeah, this is at blue belt, you're going to really struggle, but it's just blue belt looks different for so many different people. It's just in your jiu-jitsu journey, you are definitely going to struggle, but it's kind of the point.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. As far as on the business side of things, like what would you say has kind of been the biggest struggle for you as far as like running a school, you know, even going back to your personal training business when you had that?
Marketing
it.
I think that was, you know, I got a lot. I learned how I still see my 13 years ago Facebook posts from when I was 18 and a brand new personal trainer.
Yeah.
Some of them are actually pretty hilarious, but most of them are horrible. And it was just me learning to market. That was like some of the first marketing I was learning to do. And I went my first couple of years in my jiu-jitsu business and we were stuck in this, I mean, literally pay the bills. We never were losing money, but we were never making money. Mm. And for me, I was trying to transition from where I was making money in personal training to jiu-jitsu, but I couldn't do that. So I was doing both jobs. And it was just, I needed something that could help me be consistent in my jiu-jitsu business. And so there was like, I want to say we were at like 54 students. And that's, I think, this range that you would consider like most small jiu-jitsu schools. Right at 50, it's super hard to get past it. It's hard to make any money off of it. And you also, like, when baseball season starts, no offense, but when baseball season starts, all the kids go to baseball.
Sure.
And it's like, oh crap, that sucks. Like, we only have 40 people, you know? Mm-hmm. We were in that kind of middle range. And one day
when was this, you think?
This would have been 2017.
Okay.
And so I had had my business for like 2 years, and we were like, I was just looking for something. And do you know who Matt Arroyo is? Huge on Instagram right now, TikTok.
He does the shorts where he shows you how to do a move. He used to fight in the UFC. He can kind of be a little dry.
He fought in the Ultimate Fighter. Yep. But what really blew him up is he has Dave Bautista as one of his brown belts.
Oh, that guy.
And,
yeah. I know.
And so, yeah. Okay. And then he had Marcelo recently on his shorts and stuff. So that his stuff's really blown up since. But at that time, he was doing internet marketing. It was like, how to advertise for a jiu-jitsu school on Facebook. And it was literally like, hey, I will teach you what Facebook advertising is. I will teach you the strategy that works for me, and you'll have it. I'm like, okay. And so I bought it. I bought you could get a 30-minute coaching call with him. I bought that too. And it was probably all the money that the business had made and, you know, all the money the business had profited. And it literally went from like, in 6 months, because it was June 1st when we started doing all this, and I was like, I want to have 100 students, almost double our gym, mm-hmm. by June 1st. And so in 6 months, okay. I want to do that. And that was like the goal. And I'm like, there's no way, because it was like, set a big goal. Like, sure. There's no way that we'll actually do this. It's taken me this long, two and a half years to get 50. And it worked so well. And we were at 99 students. And I think May 30th was a Saturday, and I'm like, I have nobody doing a free trial. I missed my mark by one. And then one of my, he's actually one of my black belts now, had trained for years, had at a different school, had moved, quite a bit away, but was close to me now, and just hadn't trained in years, just decided to walk in that Saturday, and he'd already done a free trial. And he goes, hey, I'm signing up today. And we hit 100.
Sick.
And that's awesome. So it was like, from there, you know, the jiu-jitsu school was, it wasn't long after that I was full-time teaching jiu-jitsu.
Huge. And mm-hmm. how many members are you guys at now?
Like, between the two schools, almost 300. We're not at 300, but we're almost at 300. And it's like, what's cool now is it's not just my income, it's my wife's. She's a general manager of our gym.
Ah, dude. That's awesome. Amazing. So is that, does she have another job other than that, or she?
So she was doing hair for a long time. She had just stopped. She still does weddings, things like that. But she doesn't rent anywhere, or, you know, she cuts our family's hair. That's pretty much it.
And she trains as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that's so cool.
Yeah, and what's crazy is we've been together for a really long time. She would train a little bit and then like, it's not for me. Train a little bit, wasn't for her. And then one time, she like was kind of getting back into it. There were a few other girls at the school, and they all decided that they wanted to compete at, and it was a big tournament, American Nationals. Or no. Yeah, it was American Nationals. And so it was in Dallas, and it was during like lockdowns of COVID. Mm-hmm. And so nobody was doing anything. And it was just like, this will be something fun to do. And she was a white belt, and she did it. She lost, but it was such a cool experience. And it was such a motivating thing of like, I want to win. Mm-hmm. I really want to win one of these. And that's what got her in. I mean, and she got her blue belt maybe 2 years ago. And so, you know, 2022, I think we started dating in 2011. Yeah. And so it took her, you know, 11 years of dating me to get her blue belt.
To get her blue belt.
You
know? Yeah. Dude, that's awesome.
You'll know? Wear them down eventually.
Yep. Babe, usually the people that hook up with the coach get promoted a lot faster.
Right. That's going on. Yeah, she's doing something wrong.
On the flip side of that, what's one of the biggest lessons that you've learned through the process of being an entrepreneur?
Just the skill of learning, understanding that learning is a skill. it's so easy to, you know, I have notebooks from 10 years ago where I like wrote down my goals of things. And now when I look at those, I'm like, oh, those goals were stupid. You know, they didn't even make sense. Right. And what happened is as I learned a little bit every day, I changed, you know, my perspective changed. I changed as a person. And then the goals that I wanted to set changed too. And like the thing is, I say those 10 year ago goals were stupid, but they were really important to getting me to start that learning process. And when I just separate it like to everything that I've done that has been good, it has just come from being surrounded by the right people. And I think if there's like a skill that I have that I'm good at that I've sharpened a lot is being good at learning from people and just absorbing people's perspective. And so that is just so valuable in entrepreneurship, because then it just becomes a matter of, well, who do I get to be around?
Right. Well, I mean, look at what you did with, you know, the marketing. You know, you hired the coach and doubled your membership. I mean, it's a perfect example right there.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, and I would say, like, I credit that a lot to my dad, but also Kyle Watson, our jujitsu coach, he is, to me, and I think that if you got to train at a few more places, you would really get this and see that it's not like this in those places.
Yeah.
And so when you get to experience it more, you go, wait a second, most of these guys are showing me the jujitsu that they learned, you know, when they were purple and brown belts. And it's like move for move, that's what they are showing me. When Kyle is showing you something, you know, as a black belt that's been around, you know, he's had a black belt for like, I think 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
When he shows you something like that, it is how he sees it now after years of learning and years of bringing in the best coaches and secretly doing private lessons with him and not telling any of us and not inviting any of us, right? And getting extra training and picking their brain on stuff. And it's like how he's been in his business, how he's been in his jiu-jitsu. It's how he was from the middle of nowhere, Illinois, and fought in the UFC. It's like, and I got to learn from that guy every day.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things I learned was like, even when he was better than a guy, if he felt like the guy was better in an area, his humility in asking them questions was never like, what do you do from here? Because this is what I like to do. Or what do you do from here? Like, oh, I don't like that answer. Just listen. And just like always be like, oh, okay. And then he would get that same, he would ask 50 people about that same position.
Oh yeah. And I mean, there's like, for example, like we were, it was last week, I think, you know, where we were drilling at open mat, or we, you know, I had a round with him. He's like, all right, here, let me put you in this. What are you going to do from right? What are you going to do from right here? You know, what are your options? You know? And I'm like, this is crazy. I was just like watching his brain work right here. You know, it's just, it's what he's created there is so special, man. Cause like you said, you know, I have trained a couple other places, and, you know, I trained under Ezra for about a year, and then Ezra went back to Columbia, and then, trained under, you know, the other black belt that they brought in, and then COVID hit, and then we all just trained out of either in my garage, or one of our buddies had mats in his basement, and we trained there for 4 months. And pretty much when Ezra left, like all the color belts, you know, kind of seemed to filter out of Finney's, and most of them went to Kyle. So I was like, all right, well, I guess that's where I'm going now.
Mm.
And yeah, the second they opened back up after COVID, you know, I was there, and you know, and right away I was like, oh, this is so much different than what I, you know, it's just so organized. Like, I mean, Kyle's got the whole like year planned out, you know, and like the amount of students that he has and how he keeps track everybody. And man, he knows everybody's name, which is always astounding to me, you know, cause it's like, that's hard for me throwing in like all the stripes and promotions. And, you know, I mean, he's got, you know, how many students does he have? Like over 300 probably,
I honestly haven't asked him in a long time, but
pretty sure
got to assume it's closer to four.
It's close to four. Yeah. It has to be. No. Yeah. He's an awesome coach, and just, I mean, he's just a great, great guy. We're very fortunate, to have him as a coach.
And for me, like, he's been my coach since day one. Right. And I've been able to do some really good things competitively in jiu-jitsu, and been my coach since day one.
Yeah.
And when I think about it too, though, like in the way we run our businesses, the way that we do jujitsu, the way that we teach jujitsu, if you pay attention, it's different than each other. It's totally different. But we, one, are able to learn from each other constantly, are able to coach each other in jujitsu still to this day. I mean, we have so many accomplished black belts that can coach me, but Kyle still always If I get a choice, it's always Kyle, and Kyle's the same way with me. And when you think about that, it's like two totally different dudes, but I really think just certain habits that he brought to the table that I learned from him that has allowed us both to just stick together and just boost each other so much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he really brings you up, man. And he, you know, he always just lets you know what you need to work on. I mean, just, he's just such a great coach. I can't say enough good things about him, man. We're very fortunate to
totally agree
to have him. So,
well, question for both of you guys. Since you guys have been doing this for so long, how have you guys seen the game or the sport evolve since you guys got into it?
When did you start, and how?
2018.
How has it been for you?
Man, I wrestled in high school, so kind of coming in with a little bit of wrestling helped a lot. But I mean, I definitely think it's evolved in the last 5 years. I mean, just really in what I've seen is just the popularity of the sport. You know, I mean, think of how much it's grown over the last 5 years. There's that Fuji tournament, the last one that was in town. I think someone said the year before it was at like, there was like 500 competitors signed up. And then this past year there was over 1,000, which is like in 1 year, it just fucking doubled.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that has to do with like the popularity of UFC growing, or do you think it has?
I think so.
Yeah.
I would say so, right?
And I just think that it's spoken about so positively.
Rogan, Jocko.
Mm-hmm. Podcast revolution.
Yeah.
And it just like, that was what I was going to say from 18.
That's kind of why I started, to be honest.
Has been the ways that you can consume jiu-jitsu.
Mm.
You used to be able, okay, so when I started jiu-jitsu, and we actually trained jiu-jitsu before we ever trained jiu-jitsu, my dad and I, when I was 8, we had, we were buying the Gracie in Action VHS tapes. And we would watch them through, like as if we were sitting down for a family movie. You know,
Real quick, for those people that are listening, VHS is an actual tape that you put in a tape.
VCR.
VCR to play on the screen. Yeah.
You before had to rewind DVDs them.
Before streaming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to say that it was at a time that we were putting those VHSs in our DVD VHS combo. Gotcha. I think that it was in that middle ground. And so, but
that transition.
Yeah. And you go from like there to what jiu-jitsu is now. And a lot of that stuff, like if you've ever seen the original Gracie in Action, like Elio didn't speak English. And so there would be a voiceover or no voiceover at all. And he would just show you physically like the 3 steps to the move and then like point at things. And then you would do the move.
Yeah.
And so that was like how jiu-jitsu was really the only way to consume it, or you rent UFC 1, right? And that was it. And now when you think about that, you can not even tell TikTok that you're a jiu-jitsu guy, but eventually you are going to be seeing jiu-jitsu stuff. And you're going to be seeing fighting stuff. And it's just like, there's so many more ways to consume it, so many more ways to express it. And so that's what I've seen in the last like 5 or 6 years. But, like, I think when I first started, you know, maybe those first 5, 10 years I first started, I think there was, like, this big transition to get to a family-friendly enough point to be able to. If there were podcasts in 2008 when I started jiu-jitsu and people were talking about what was happening at their jiu-jitsu schools, it would be, we would all stop training jiu-jitsu. Nobody would be, it would not have been positive for jiu-jitsu. It was just so, not that jiu-jitsu isn't violent now, but it was just so excessively violent, because at that time in 2008, it wasn't uncommon that you were having to prove that jiu-jitsu worked. In a sense that like most guys that came off the street were like, I want to learn martial arts. Like, this stuff looks dumb. And then you had to submit them. But then there were even guys like Jared Weiner was on my podcast, and he was talking about having to do challenge matches. Like, people from other martial arts would come into the gym, and he'd be a blue belt. Like, 2 years of jiu-jitsu training, they'd be like, Jared, you're going to fight this guy.
Yeah, fight. Yeah. You're just going to fight this dude off the street who thinks jiu-jitsu doesn't
who
work.
Does kung fu, you know? And like, okay, sounds good. And that was the mentality. So it was just so much rougher and so much meaner. And now, most people that come in like, hey, I know this stuff works. I know I'm going to have to get beat up. I understand all this stuff now. And so it's just like, but I think it had to get nice enough to, you know, it's been good for jiu-jitsu that podcasts and things have hit now. You know?
Yeah, sure. And then I think I was listening to one of your episodes recently, and I think you were talking about I think it was police officers, and you know, you either, you know, when they come in and train, if they have no prior training experience, you know, one of two things happens. They go in, you know, evidently, you know, they have a, some 16-year-old kid throws them around, ragdolls them, and realizes that, you know, the 16-year-old that weighs 140 pounds can hold me down and I can't get up. And, you know, one of two things happens. They either, you know, sign up right away, or they just ignore what they just saw and pretend that that didn't happen, and they just go back to work.
Well, I think Jonko said it best. I see. He's like, it should be a requirement for anybody that's in law enforcement to train jiu-jitsu on a daily basis. Like, it should be part of their regiment and training, because he's like, with all the you know, the police murders and things like that, like, there are police shootings, like, so much of that could be avoided if they knew basic jiu-jitsu.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, I mean, I can think of several times that I've trained with a police officer that's come in, but there was one time specifically that there was this guy, and it was at Finney's, the first place I trained. I'd probably been training for 6 months to a year. I think I had like one stripe on my white belt. And I remember this guy coming in and, you know, trying to talk all tough to me before that he's a SWAT sniper. And then I just remember like just subbing him several times in a round. And I was like, oh, well, that wasn't, I think a lot, you know, I just remember.
You're like I'm a real estate agent.
Yeah. I'm a real estate agent. Actually, at the time, I think I was waiting tables. I was like, I'm slinging pancakes, bro. And I just fucked up this SWAT sniper, big tough guy, you know? And yeah, it was super eye opening to me. And I was like, oh, wow. Hey, how can you be? I can't imagine if, you know, you're kind of putting your life on the line every single day when you're a police officer and you just don't have this level of training. It just, you're missing out.
And it's as simple as like, cause that's like, oh, well, no, it's not fighting. It's not what I'm talking about. Like, you couldn't hold somebody down who wanted to get up. Mm-hmm. You couldn't, you know, especially if that person's a little bigger and a little stronger and a little more athletic than you. Like, that's a huge requirement of your job, to be able to hold somebody down. I was, I drove by a business the other day, and in the parking lot, there was, you know, it's Granite City. Sure. I don't know if he was drunk, if he was on drugs. You know, it's Tuesday, 12 p.m., bro. Like, it's, you know, there's wild stuff going on at Granite City at noon. And so there's four police cars around him, and I can tell that, like, none of the police officers are near this dude's size, and he's acting ignorant, and I'm like driving pretty slow. My windows are down. I can just hear him. And I go get coffee, and like 10 minutes later, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go the long way home just so I can drive by. And I drive by, and they're still standing in the exact same spot as this dude is still going wilder and wilder. And I'm like, man, what are these guys going to do when, you know, if this gets physical, if they don't know how to grapple? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what, just because this dude's obviously upset about something, and he is big. You know, he was a really big, just a guy that I wouldn't have wanted to have to fight. Right. And I'm good at jiu-jitsu, you know?
Right.
And so, and I just saw that, and it kind of played in my mind, like, man, these guys, they need it. And I then think back to, like, I've seen that happen, how you had said, you know, oh, yeah, you know, this guy's a sniper, or yeah, I'm a big game hunter, yeah, or I am a, you know, I run down criminals all day, blah, 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 right? And then they grapple with like a PE teacher in the first round, and they just are getting crushed.
And they're gassed.
And they're gassed. Yeah. And it's the most shocking thing. And you really do get to see, like, to me, and this is obviously very matter of fact, and I'm being super judgmental, but you get to see who good police officers are and bad police officers. The guys that go, wait a second, that is my job requirement to not let what just happened to me happen to me. I need to do this. And then there are the guys that are like, I don't like what just happened to me, so I won't go back. And it's like, yeah, but what if that happened to you when a gun was involved?
Right. Or like out on the street, a guy picks up a rock or a, you know, something, you know, you just
takes you by surprise.
Yeah. And so to me, it's just, That really should be a requirement. And I, again, jiu-jitsu is growing, and I think we are going in that direction. I have five different students that are police officers that mm-hmm. teach jiu-jitsu to police officers.
Yeah.
And in different, you know, departments and different places. And so that's something that we really take a lot of pride in, is like, you know, I don't want to deal with police officers. You know, I don't want to teach them, but I want them to, you know, I want like my guys to be the ones teaching them, right? Yeah. The guys that I know, like, hey, these guys have been taught how to teach jiu-jitsu and really how to control somebody. And so then they also are willing to do all kinds of other training with Gracie combatives and things like that, that that are more recognized now. And yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction when I talk to those guys and they're like, yeah, this department's changing this a little and it's changing this a little. And so hopefully that leads to maybe one huge change when it comes to jiu-jitsu and law enforcement.
Yeah, I hope so too. Yeah, sure. Oh man. So, ever since becoming a dad, how's that changed your training? How's it changed your life in general?
Man, everything has changed for sure. Perspective has changed. The day-to-day life has changed. And, we're just now, I think at 6 months, starting to get some footing, it feels like, and to get a normal schedule. And he's starting to sleep now. God. And so that has been the big thing. I've competed a few times in these last 6 months, but like I just turned 30 this year. So in jiu-jitsu divisions, I'm allowed to do master one, which is 30 to 35. And so normally, like, I'm still planning on staying an adult for a while, but it's not like you have to commit to it. And so I was like, oh, I can still compete a little, maybe not in as good of shape as I normally am for adult. And so I've been doing that a little bit, but it's definitely like, yeah, this dude's going to have to start sleeping if we're going to get back to adult, you know? Yeah,
for sure.
And so that has, you know, that's been a change. But man, besides that, it has just been so much fun. It's just been, I mean, I guess you guys probably, maybe you have better words, but they're just like, I can't think of words to describe what it's like to just see him start to point at stuff to tell me.
Point, right? Wait till he starts walking around, starts talking. Cause like that's where I'm at. I mean, my son just turned two. So, you know, I'm about a year and a half ahead of you. And, you know, he's starting to put sentences together. I'm like, daddy, I want animal crackers in the purple bowl. It's like, okay, you got right. it, buddy. You know, purple bowl it is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like blows your mind. You know, he'll just like randomly say things that I guess he hears us say. And he'll just be like last night, for instance, he like runs out of the room and says, I'll be right back.
We're rocking out the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, dude. And that's his new thing. So my wife loves Taylor Swift. And so, she, you know, whenever she's driving around in the car with him, she always puts Taylor on and he's always asking, put Taylor. And then the other day we were in my car and I'm just trying to put on something else other than Taylor Swift. And so I put a Red Hot Chili Pepper song on and he just starts like nodding his head and I'm like, oh, cool. All right. You like this? And he's like, yeah. He's like, daddy, what is this? This is it. But now, so now every time he gets in the car, he asks for Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I like
and
that.
I like Red Hot Chili Peppers, but they're not like my favorite band. It just so happened to be what was on. And he was like nodding his head. And I was like, all right, I guess this is our thing now. But
your favorite
what
band.
What I would tell you to do. So Melissa and I did this with the boys. We started a playlist for them on Spotify.
Okay.
And so anytime we play music or something that we're listening to that they like, they're like, dad, can you add this to the playlist?
Oh, that's
and
good.
So
that's
then
good
we go, and then we go and add it to their playlist. And so, I mean, they've got a playlist of all sorts of different shit.
Okay.
From, you know, old school rock to country to rap to Taylor Swift to kids songs. So
I made the mistake of putting like kids songs on because he loves Blippi, the YouTube Blippi guy. And so he was asking for like some of Blippi's songs, and I made the mistake of putting it on one day, and then I had to listen to that on repeat for several weeks until I've told them it's broken. Sorry, the song's broken.
They'll ask, dad, do you have this song? Sorry, it's not on here.
They got rid of it.
The Blippi Excavator song's broken, man. Yeah. I don't know what happened. It just won't play.
Yeah, Blippi got canceled, my son. I'm going to have to tell you about that. I think that, so I've been doing an experiment with my son, so we'll see if it screws him up 18 years from now. So everybody tells me that, like, oh, I'm just trying to get my kid to, pay attention to something. So they play something on TV for them. And it's always like baby stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the parents are like, I am going to kill, you know, Bluey or Blippi, I'm going to kill whoever. Whatever, right. Yeah. And so I was like, what if I only play him stuff that I like, you know, let's see how it works. And so right now, the only thing that he actually, there's two things that he really likes. I can't figure out the correlation, but he loves on YouTube the Tiny Desk concert that 311 plays. Great concert. Great okay. Tiny Desk concert. Probably four or five of the best 311 songs they do it live. He's got great taste.
Okay.
And then the other thing that he loves, and this is just, I just will play different videos, and he loves music, but just certain songs he really loves. He loves Who Let the Dogs Out by Bob Holland. The woof, woof, woof part. He is so into it. He will just stare like, yeah, dad.
Well, that's yeah. pretty fitting for Head Nod. Like,
exactly.
The dog pound.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You know, he was, yeah, he's like, dad, I'm a dog. You know, yeah, it's going to be bad when this backfires on me and he starts barking instead of talking.
Yeah. You
know? Wait until he starts listening to DMX.
Yeah. Like, hey, dad, where the hood at?
Yeah. Where the hood at?
Hex gonna give it to you.
So what's your training schedule like? Like, how many days a week are you actually like getting in there and training yourself?
So it's always dependent on if I'm in jiu-jitsu shape or not. So, like, I feel like as you get better and you can win most rounds, you can do training sessions without having to, and, like, just do open mat style training sessions.
Oh, like we rolled on Monday where you just manhandled me and I didn't even look like you changed your breathing at all.
Yeah, that sounds right. Sounds that was right. Monday. Yeah. Yeah, that was about, but it wasn't just you.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just you. It wasn't
so you
like
to beat my main training partner right after me.
I did. Yeah. I did. And I talked way more trash to him.
Well, yeah, because I'm sitting there watching. So.
Yeah, I talked more trash to him while I was beating you up and then continued to talk trash to him while I was beating him up. So. Yeah.
Was it Nick?
Yeah.
It was Nick.
Yeah, yeah. It should
have been Nick. It was Nick. Shout out to Nick.
I know Nick watches the show. So.
All right. What's his paint company?
Grappling Home Solutions.
All right. Yeah. Shout out Grappling Home Solutions. Like some days you can go in, and so that's a good example. It's like I train twice that day okay. on Monday, and I can't do that at 30 when I go to Revive on a Friday, and I have to train with like Nick Sanders and Kyle, you know, those two rounds, even though I did 8-9 at Watson's, those two rounds just take more. I don't even know what it is. It's like the ability to move out of me. And so there's no way that I'm training that night and probably not even the next day. Right.
Okay.
But if I can kind of be in good enough shape to control the pace of rounds, I like to train like 6-7 times a week if I can. Obviously, that's always going to be dependent on my son. I only teach 4 classes a week. Okay. And so I will almost always train with all 4 of those classes.
So you're just like jumping in the rolling portion?
Yeah. Okay. And so then with my dad teaches a class once a week that I always go to. And we'll kind of both teach sometimes, but I always train with those guys too. But besides that, it's like then I decide what open mats that I want to hit. I've been hitting Watson's again on Mondays, you know, calling you guys out on the Facebook group. And then only you and Nick are showing up to defend the team.
Yeah, I know. What the fuck is that, guys?
That's what I'm saying. When I was a purple belt at Watson's, that wouldn't have flown.
Back in my day.
Yeah, back in my day. Like, and if that black belt that talked trash in the Facebook group then came and beat up, you know, me and my best training partner.
Two of the purple belt coaches there.
We would have stabbed him, bro. We would have stabbed him in the parking lot.
Well, I'm following you out to your car.
Yeah, come on. What happened to the Watson martial arts that I used to know?
You would have tried to stab him and then you would have beat your ass.
He'll take the knife away from me pretty quickly.
Like, dang it, I lost another round.
This time it's on concrete.
And so, my training schedule now it's very floating, I feel like. But I have that ability because my work schedule is very floating, you know? Yeah.
Well, your work schedule is jiu-jitsu too.
It is.
So that helps.
Uh-huh. And so it sucks. So like a lot of the stuff I do for work now is video editing and podcasting. Not that those aren't fun.
Yeah.
But they're not actually beating people up.
Right.
You know?
That is more fun.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm talking to this guy and I'm like, man, what if we were just fighting right now?
Yeah.
You know, you would probably even be beating me, but it would be great. You know, we would both be having a great time.
There's an idea for your podcast. Just mic each other up and roll with each other while having a conversation.
I like that one.
Talking shit with each other.
Well, we have to cut out the heavy breathing.
Yeah,
though,
there's a lot of that.
So you mentioned your dad and being in this and all that. How often are you guys rolling with each other?
So every single Saturday we do at least one five-minute round. I would say on average 1 to 2 times a week we'll train together. But like definitely once a week we will do. It's kind of so as you get older too. I mean, almost anybody that you meet that does jiu-jitsu that's 60. Does not, or over 60, doesn't train live. And if they do, it's like so chill. Like my dad trains pretty hard, but he just has training partners he can trust. And so there's on his Saturday that he teaches our class, usually there's like 4 or 5 black belts, and that's his main training group. And he goes hard with that training group because it's people you can trust, right?
Right.
And so, I posted one on YouTube maybe like 4 months ago, but we do a round like that with a very good intensity every single week.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. There's something there that, you know, Josh said that, you know, you might not be aware of, but like, you know, it sounds kind of counterintuitive that, you know, rolling with the black belts is safer.
No, I believe it. I mean, they're technically more sound than somebody at a lower level.
Right.
And I mean, it's the same with baseball. Like for me, I would rather pitch against higher level hitters because they're more disciplined at the plate. So it's easier for me to, like, if I have control of my pitches on a day, it's easier to pitch against those guys, at least get ahead of them in an account, like where I've got more strikes than balls. Mm-hmm. But trying to get those fuckers out is way more difficult than a guy's at a younger level because, I mean, I could throw a pitch off the backstop and a guy at a younger level is probably going to swing at it where, you know, I could dot up a pitch on the outside fastball that they're just going to just flip their wrist at and fall off because they know that's not a pitch they're going to hit. Like it makes sense that the higher the level, the more technical they are, the better they are, the more in control of the things that they have. And I mean, I totally get that.
Yeah, and not only that, if you were about to throw high inside, I would rather you be able to throw.
Right.
You know, like I do not want you not being able to throw that pitch on me. And that's how it is with jiu-jitsu is like, if you are going for a guard pass, you're not good at that guard pass and you just like fall on the dude a little weird and you headbutt him a little weird. Like that was such a freak thing to happen, but it was just because you couldn't control yourself as well,
right?
You know? And so, yeah, with really good black belts, the amount of feel that those guys can have when you go with somebody like really good that isn't trying, you know what I mean? They're trying obviously,
sure,
but they're not using a ton of strength.
Right.
And you feel that it's the weirdest feeling because you're like, maybe if I used a little more strength, it would even out. And then you try and you're like,
nope,
but now I'm just tired.
Yeah.
And it's just this. And then like black belts, ideally, if there is not as much ego in it, they can roll with each other at that level of not using much strength. And so like, if you see me and my dad roll, you'll see cooler positions in that round with him being 60 than you will see most adult rounds, because people are so tight and so not willing to do anything. And we're both trying stuff. And
I mean, when I was up in AAA, the games were so much more relaxed and plays like just the easy, normal play. Everything was getting made.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made the difficult plays still look easy. And at the lower levels, like it's just sporadic. And you can, like you said, you feel the tension.
Mm-hmm.
But at those, it's just so relaxed.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. The higher the level.
The same thing with jiu-jitsu, you know, you get those new white belts that are just, everything's just,
yep,
you know, and they're just like vibrating because they're squeezing everything so hard.
Murph, is it?
I've kind of resigned myself to understanding that like, this is the time to be humble. And when I started doing jiu-jitsu at first form, Marcel Fortuna, who used to be St. Charles MMA, he would come in and teach us, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday mornings, we do an open roll on Fridays. Back then, I had a lot more ego because I would then have to go work with those guys for 8 hours the rest of the day. And one of them was Madat.
And talk shit to you the whole day.
No, dude, Madat is the most subtle shit talk in the world. Like, you'll just be going about your day, be like, what's up, Madat? Pussy. And like, but
that doesn't feel subtle.
No, but like, it'll be like, sup, pussy. But no, he's a goon too. But whenever we started to do the show, I told Zach, I was like, hey, if we end up doing this, I think it's really good for me to get back into Watts since that's something I can do outside of this and running my own business. You get a little cumbersome. I hate doing bodybuilding style shit. I really do. It bothers me. So back in those days, I was a lot more tight. Now I like rolling with upper belts, like purple and up, just because I know I'm going to lose, but I don't have the same ego because like they'll talk me through what I'm doing wrong. And I hate dealing with spazzy white belts. Like back in those days is when I got hurt the most because everyone was just trying to out ego each other. Like, I'm a strong guy.
Well,
like,
and think about it too. How much are you really going to learn fighting with somebody that's the same level as you are versus someone that's at a higher level?
You're really not. No. Like, the thing I like about training with Pat, and Pat's like my go-to training partner, is there. He's a little bit ahead of me at Watson's. And so, you know, we're still learning at the same time, but there's not a lot of ego between the two of us. And he says, hey, I just ran a marathon yesterday. Don't fucking leg lock the shit out of me. I'm like, do my best. I let him practice on me most of the day. It's not ego. I just want to get better.
Right. Yeah, the best training partners are the ones that are, you know, you don't, it's not going to kill you. You know, you're fine with losing, you know, like Nick, for example. Like, me and Nick are, he's my main, been my main training partner. Him and I started 2 weeks apart from each other at Finney's, and we've just, you know, trained together, you know, almost every day since then. And, you know, he's subbed me thousands of times. I've subbed him thousands of times. It's just like, it doesn't matter if he passes my guard. I mean, yeah, of course I want to get my guard back and sweep him, but like, I'm not going to. It doesn't ruin my day, or like, right. it's just a fun thing, you know? And it's like the people that are, I always say, like, the more fun training partners are the people that are going to try stuff and not, and be okay with trying something and it not working and you capitalizing on it. And it's just a lot of back and forth just makes training a lot more fun than the people that are just going to sit there and hold you in their knee shield and mm-hmm. not move, you know? Well,
and it's like, perspective plays such a big role in getting good at jiu-jitsu. Because you could have this training regimen, you could download like the perfect training regimen PDF, and you could go to all those classes and do all those rounds, and you could have like guy A and B, and a guy A goes in with the mentality of winning every time, and then guy B not only goes in with the mentality of I'm there to get better, but his training partners have that mentality too. And so the goal of each night is let's get better together. To me, I think the best way to actually do that is to compete, because then we can say, hey, we're not the enemy in here. Watson martial arts is the enemy, you know? And so you know, in like, you can, you know, I just think it's a really good way to, like, as silly as it sounds with jiu-jitsu is obviously this individual sport, but when it comes to really getting good, it's such a team sport, and you need the right perspective of, hey, we're both here to get better. I actually have to care about you getting better. You know what I mean? It's like, it can't just be about me getting better. If it is, you'll recognize that and you'll be like, oh, it's just about Josh winning. I don't feel like I get any benefit from this. One, why am I here? Mm-hmm. But two, like, why am I helping this guy?
Right.
You know? And so I just think that, like, you know, having that perspective of, you know, nah, I don't, you know, I win some nights, I lose some nights. I think it's great to even have a certain day that you come in with the goal of just winning. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, the general goal should just be like, if I could get better today doing the things that we're doing, then that's the goal.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I've taken a lot of stuff you've talked about on your podcast and implemented it into my own training. Like, all right, well, hey, right now, you know, you've used the example, like, all right, I'm working on my Kimura, you know, like, all right, I'm just going to keep working on my Kimura. I got a little note in my phone, like, all right, every time I get a Kimura, I got a little mental tally there. And she's like, all right, I'm working on Kimuras for the next 6 months or whatever it is. And I really like that concept, because that's like kind of I've implemented that into my own training. Like, with my, like, right now I'm like, all right, I've got this one takedown I've been trying to work. All right, every time we're on the feet, that's what I'm going for, you know. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but that's what I'm going for. I'm sick of, you know, I've got my bread and butter stuff that I always go for, that I go for every time. And everybody that I train with knows that I'm going to go for that sweep single. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and, but so now I need to start switching things up, and, you know, and taking that on top of, your concept. I believe it was you that did this, the designated winner, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So I love that too, where you, all right, well, here's what we're going to do. But, you know, top guy, he's working on guard passing, bottom guy, you know, you're kind of lightly trying to sweep, lightly trying to guard retain, you know, do some guard retention, but ultimately the guy on top is going to pass the guard. And I feel like I've learned so much from that.
And what's super interesting about that, like with designated winners, just this idea of jiu-jitsu training method of, instead of us rolling live or one of us working with the other guy giving no resistance, it's like we give really controlled resistance, but basically one guy is rolling live. He's the designated winner. His job is to win every time. The other guy's job is to make that guy better, mm-hmm. right? Is to create situations where he has to move and he has to tweak and he has to respond. And people will ask me now, like, well, do you guys do that at your gym? And what's funny is, like, no, we really don't anymore. What it is it's a mentality, right? We have that mentality at our gym. So if we're working a move, if you paid attention, it may, you know, like if you came in as an outsider, you'd be like, oh, Josh showed this one move and we should all be drilling it. And then you would look around and you'd be like, these guys are all being so disrespectful, not drilling that one move. They're starting from that position, but they're drilling three, four different things. And a big part of designated winner is to get good at anything. If you can tie it to something you're already good at, you know, something you already understand well, makes it so much easier to understand it because you understand that well. And so if I show you a new move, I want you to add it to the things that you already do. You may only be hitting that move 5% of the time, but it's way more effective than me convincing you like, hey, this is the only move. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so like, it's interesting that back to that perspective shift is like, I feel like designated winner has just shifted the perspective of the gym and of the team. And so now it's like very seldom. We still do play certain designated winner games, especially like them for warm ups for like, if we're going to do guard retention, have certain games we play. And so we'll do that. But most of the time it's just like, I show some jujitsu and my students are kind of responsible enough to add it to their game themselves. And so that's been a really cool kind of progression in that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Speaking of tips, what kind of tips do you recommend or do you give to people starting out in jiu-jitsu or wanting to get started? So I myself looking to get into it, what kind of tips would you recommend or would you give to somebody like myself?
Okay, so first tip you don't need because you already have a place that you're going to train. First tip is choose a really good place. Have people that you trust, if you can, tell you that. If not, if you looked, I bet Watson Martial Arts probably has the best Google reviews too. Yeah. And so it really is one of the best places to train. And there's a lot of data that shows that, right? And so I think that is going to be the most important thing because you're going to need a coach, you know, like you're going to need a team. And that just initial step, you could do like everything else right. But if you were just in the wrong environment, it's going to be the wrong environment forever. And so like once you have a good coach, you just, I think first, I know you're like people like, oh yeah, you go and you just lose and you do all this. Like you're going to win some rounds. It's a huge school. They're going to be guys that are also brand new and aren't as athletic, aren't as strong and just aren't as natural at doing jiu-jitsu. And so you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, but your first job is to build we call like the skill of consistency. The only way you get to black belt in jiu-jitsu is by doing it for a really long time and being consistent. And it doesn't even mean you have to train every day. For a lot of guys, like you said, the average is like 3 or 4 days a week. And I would say that's probably, even for some of my best guys, that is the average, is 3 or 4 days a week. They're not guys that are training 10 times a week. So it's more just like, can I build that consistency in my schedule, whatever that looks like? And once you have that, then you're going to find like how you want to start doing jiu-jitsu, why you want to start. You might decide like, okay, this competition idea seems cool. You know, I competed a lot. Competition seems like what I want to go to. And then from there, you take that skill of consistency and you go, okay, well, coach, how do I get ready for a competition? And so then you already have the hard part down and then you can kind of apply that new regimen and get to kind of how we were saying, like you get to express jiu-jitsu in all these different ways, but you just first have to make sure you're starting to learn it. You're just consistently showing up. And once you're there, man, it's like, then you just get to have fun with it.
Yeah. Well, Josh, is there anything you want to plug or, you know?
Man, thank you guys for having me on. It was fun getting to talk to you guys.
Yeah, for sure, dude. Well,
we've got one more question that we end it. We call it the tombstone game.
Oh, no.
All right. Here lies Josh. What's it say on your tombstone?
Here lies Josh. Ooh, this is terrible, but this is all I can think of, and I shouldn't say this. Here lies Josh McKinney. He beat AJ Agger's arm. And that's never a joke I make on my podcast. I just thought I would make it on yours. There's a good backstory to that. Not one of the most liked characters in the jiu-jitsu space.
Yeah.
And I always joked that, you know, after a certain situation that we had, that I would put that on my tombstone. And so that was all I could think of in the moment. But
consistency.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah,
he's consistent.
Yeah,
going back to the jiu-jitsu advice.
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Well, go check out Josh's YouTube channel and his podcast. Your YouTube is
Josh McKinney.
Yeah, just his name. The name of the podcast is the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So go on there, check that out, give him a follow, and subscribe. And if you're not subscribed to our show, please hit that button, hit that like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.